Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hello everyone, this is Brad Larson, host of the Property Management Mastermind Podcast. To see a complete list of the offers and discounts we have worked to provide, visit our website at propertymanagementmastermind.com. In there, you will find additional discounts from Tenant Turner, Citizen Home Solutions, PMW Websites, and several others. Also, be sure to check out our Seminar and Conferences tab, where we highlight different conferences going around the country, business and property management related. Lastly, be sure to seek out the Facebook group we have started and become a member. In that group, the PM community at large, to include vendors, are welcome to join. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show. In today's show, I have Bob Walters from Australia. He is the founder and godfather of LPMA, which is the leading property managers, used to be of Australia. Now it's the Leading Property Managers Association. And Bob is going to come to us here in a couple different scenarios. I want you to understand the gravity of what kind of a guest he is. Bob has been around for 43 plus years doing property management. He's been a very successful entrepreneurial guy who's built up three management companies to manage over 4,000 units over those years. He successfully sold and exited all of them in a very lucrative space of Australia. So his background is beyond recourse. I mean, it's just amazing that I got him on the show. And so I want to give him a little bit of more of an intro here, because as we get into the show, it's just a kickoff. I don't give him any time to like say how good he is or what he is, whatever that. So I was going to do all the bragging for him. He's been a mentor to me. I've listened to and watched most of his recordings that he's put out. And he's been doing conferences at LPMA in Australia and New Zealand for the last 11, 12 years. And he's pretty much a pro at this. So I'm very excited to have Bob on the show. And a couple of things I'm going to tell you that we did talk about. We talked about structure. We talked about acquisitions. We talked about a lot of different things involving the property management business. So it's just a real good episode. I'm very happy to have him on. So without further ado, let's bring on Bob Walters. Hey, and welcome to another edition of the Property Management Mastermind Show. Today's guest, I have Bob Walters from Australia. And as I said on the show intro, there's a lot of good stuff going on with this gentleman in my office in studio today. I'm your host, Brad Larson. So let's kick into it right away. We're talking about things that are relevant to the property management industry. And I'm very honored again to have Bob here being able to talk to us more about some of the things that are going to be relevant to the group. And so we had a couple notes we wrote down. Bob and I came up with a good kind of a show structure to kick this around. And the first thing we want to talk about are the five S's of property management. So with that, I'd like to introduce Bob Walters, and we can kick right into the five S's. Bob, how are you doing today?
Yeah, good day, everybody. It's great to be in San Antonio, Texas, and talking to American property management professionals. So yes, let's talk about the five S's of property management. In that case, it's structure, it's strategy, it's systems, it's service, and it's standards.
Excellent. So let's dive into all those, because it's an easy thing to remember those, the five S's. You know, a lot of us people have the 3S rule, you shoot, shovel, and shut up. Well, we have the 5S rule for property management, structure. And that's a debate that probably could take a whole podcast on how to structure a business. And I'm going to paraphrase this and let Bob take it over, is there's no right or wrong way to structure your business. It's you got to do whatever you got to do to delight your clients. Bob, please expand on that.
Yes, I certainly, in 44 years in the industry, I've been asked countless times, you know, what's the right staffing structure to have for a property management business? And the answer is now, there is no best or right staffing structure. It's really, how many staff do I need in my team to delight the clients and still make an acceptable profit for the owners of the business?
That's a great point, because we're seeing this bouncing around a lot. Even at the most recent conference, there was a discussion on structuring your business. Now, we do portfolio management-based structuring. It's modeled after Andrew Reese, who is an LPMA member, who is one of the gentlemen you brought in to help speak at some of your conferences you put on. We subscribe to that model, but there's also some merit in departmental-based, and there's also a hybrid, and then there's also a squad method. There's all kinds of ways to structure it.
But I think the bottom line is exactly what you said. It's a matter of what you can do inside of your business to delight your clients. And we could talk all day about structure, about what we do, how it works. We could talk about departmental, how that's supposed to work. But I think the bottom line is relevant nonetheless. It does tie into one of the other S's we would kick into is systems. Having good systems for everything you do is a great thing to say in cliche form, a lot different to execute in person. So, Bob, a few words on that.
Yeah, a few words on systems. You know, it's still hard to imagine in 2018 that there are so many property management businesses that ride by the seat of their pants in terms of not having properly documented systems and processes. And so in my view, property management is mostly process work. It needs properly documented processes mapped out. Of course, those processes need to be properly trained to the team. And of course, there needs to be a compliance tool there to make sure that all those systems and processes are followed. Because you can have the best procedure manual on the planet, but if you don't have someone there ensuring proper compliance, then it's worthless.
That's a great point on the process work, because a lot of us are doing the same things over and over and over again. You are executing a lease agreement, you move in a tenant, the tenant's paying rent, the tenant moves out, you do an inspection, you roll over the home, you execute a new lease agreement. You know, that whole life cycle just goes round and round forever and ever. And having systems around that built in to ensure that the processes are catching up to what you're doing in big theory, I love it. I mean, it's commonplace 101, but it ties into the five S's of property management. Mm-hmm. The next one is strategy. So please go on that one.
Yes. Well, once again, it's a pretty interesting industry we're in, or certainly where I come from in Australia and New Zealand. Yeah, we've been banging the drum about having a properly documented business plan for a business and a properly prepared budget. We've been banging that drum for decades down there. And when I go into offices as a consultant, you know, one of the first things I ask for is a copy of their current business plan and a copy of their budget. And it's like me asking for a $2 note. I mean, you just don't see them.
Sure. You know, you came to the office today. You saw our inventory meeting. We do a weekly inventory meeting here at the office. And the strategy that I shared with you guys is we did that strategic planning session a couple months ago with Scott Britz, who wrote the 40-hour work year. He's a solid consultant as they get for the property management business, because he's actually a member of NARPM and he's actually looking to buy and own management companies. But we went through the whole strategy of it and we came up with a five-year goal, which you saw, and you saw some of our mission, our vision, our values inside of that. So I think we're handling the strategy side okay. I mean, there's always room for improvement. The budgeting is something that we're fairly weak at. We've done projections. We have a budget in mind, but we've never actually documented a budget. So I think that's something we should improve on. Because you're exactly right. If you don't have a budget to match your strategy, you're just kind of like flying from the seat of your pants, not really having any sort of direction. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, if I could look at the typical goal of the property management business owner in Australia and New Zealand, when you go in, you find that their number one goal is they want to grow bigger. Yeah. And let's say they want to have net growth of, say, 100 doors in the next 12 months. And so I then ask the next question is, okay, well, how are you going to get there? And that's where they start to stumble and fall, because, you know, they haven't properly documented out that goal. And importantly, unless you've got a budget to do it, then it's entirely wishful thinking.
Mm-hmm. Having one goal in mind, just to make sure at least you have something on paper, we do our annual goal setting session every year. And this year, I think I came up with like 6 pages. I mean, it's everything from personal goals, marriage goals, to you also have business goals. And I broke it down to division inside of our businesses, director of marketing, our maintenance team, our general manager. I broke down those goals. So that set up the strategy to do that growth planning session. And what you mentioned just a second ago, I'm going to grow 100 doors. Well, that's not taking into account your losses. So really, you want to add 120 doors, take into account your losses of, let's say, 20 a year for fun, but you really end up with a net growth of 100. So a lot of times you think you want to grow 100 doors, but you got to figure out, okay, you're going to have losses inside of there. What are the numbers that you always typically tell people for planning losses every year?
Well, certainly in my part of the world, the property management business is always a leaking bucket. You know, you've got to keep topping it up all the time. But when it comes to attrition, mm-hmm. Certainly where I come from in Australia, attrition is usually sitting between 5 and 15% per year. So within between 5% and 15% of your bucket is going to empty out each year mm-hmm. that needs to be replaced.
Yeah, we have been seeing 20% the last couple of years. That's not like we're doing anything wrong. It's just the sales. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of reluctant landlords in this market. And when the sales market's good and they have an opportunity to sell, they're selling. So if you consider that a loss, okay, maybe, but as we talked about in the meeting, we track good, neutral, and bad losses. Good losses are being, of course, if we sell the home. Neutral losses are the owner moves back in or the owner sells with another agent who is their cousin. Okay, that's a neutral loss. We didn't do anything wrong. And of course, you have your bad losses, which we're trying to always get better on and improve to ensure that we don't have any bad losses. But the attrition rate is something you have to take into account on your strategy, which affects your goal setting, and they kind of go hand in hand. And then the last thing we want to touch on in the five S's are the standards. So hit me up with that.
Standards for me are personal performance standards and company performance standards. That is KPIs for the business and KPIs for individual team members that are carefully calculated, achievable, and regularly monitored.
The KPIs, key performance KPIs. Indicators. Yeah, the standards. A lot of things going on in my head there because we have our own metrics that we produce that we like to see. There's not a lot of KPIs necessarily for each team member because if they lease a home in 31 days versus 30 days, we don't cut their arms off. But there's got to be some standards. So, for example, 21-day occupancy check. All of our portfolio managers are demanded that if a home sits vacant for 21 days, they have to go and visit the home. So they do a quick walkthrough just to make sure the power's on, just make sure that a homeless person hasn't moved in, there's no flooding. They have to do that every 21 days so that it behooves them to try and rent that home quicker so they don't have to do that type of a walkthrough. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're incentivized by the way we do a revenue share type of a structure, as you would say. And so the revenue share ties in, and we've talked about that in other podcast episodes. And so that's the five S's of property management. And I did a lot of talking there because as you may have known from my intro, Bob is a mentor to me. He's been around for 44 years doing property management. They started the LPMA faction in Australia and New Zealand, and they've been teaching this stuff via seminars for years and years and years. And he's also built and sold management companies. I mean, he is the guy that built up, what, I think, three of them?
Yeah, I've built three property management businesses over my career, each adding up to a total of now about 4,500 properties.
That's a lot. I'd like to hear another war story. So like, tell me about you built one up and then you sold it for X and you ran to the hills.
Well, let me talk about the first one I built up. That was during the 80s. And I built it up to 1,000. And then at that stage, I was feeling totally burnt out because property management companies in Australia are very, very valuable, more valuable than they are in the US. And so I'd gone hard. I'd built up 1,000 doors, feeling totally burnt out. And then I sold out to one of my landlord clients who happened to be a chartered accountant. And fatal mistake I made was to finance him some of the purchase price without taking proper security. That's what can happen to you when you're stressed, is that you do stupid things. So I financed a chunk of the purchase price of the company to him. So it didn't take security. I found a couple of years later he was losing properties left, right, and center, and he then couldn't pay me back. So that was an ugly war story.
That's a lesson learned that we all like to hear, because that's from the real world. It's something you've done in the past. I can listen to those all day, especially in if we dove into that even further, like how do you design the acquisition or sale? The numbers are going to be skewed because to paraphrase kind of what I've talked about before is, and you may have heard this, that the Australian market, they can get 3 or 4 times revenue for their property management businesses. And saying that nicely or a different way, we could get 12 months of revenue and they could get 36 to 48 months. So that's where the rubber meets the road there. It's a different valuation structure. They're a lot more valuable, and it's the industry is different. So I don't want to go spend a lot of time on that as far as the industry differences, because I want to get focused on some of trying to take Bob's wisdom and putting it into this type of an episode. So let's transition real quick to go talk about doing a health check for businesses. And I want to talk about this with Bob because I know in his consulting days and his prior life and potentially even now, once in a while, he will do this. He'll go into a business and do a health check. But what does that mean? And so we're going to talk about that. So if you were to have somebody come and look at your business and do a health check, you know, it's just a term, but basically it's like a consultant to come in and look at what you're doing and what you're doing wrong and advise you. And it's good to have a second set of eyes from the outside to come in. So Bob, kind of let's talk about the health check for a business is. If you were to come in and look at our business, what are some of the things you'd be looking for?
Okay, well, I've designed a 20-page template that I use, which is mostly questionnaire style, which I would use in a health check situation. But I must say of probably more than 100 health checks I've done now, no two health checks been exactly the same, because in some cases it might be a small startup business and therefore you've got to be focusing on a lot of grassroots type issues with the business, where in some other cases the health check is of a much bigger business that just really needs a little bit of fine tuning around the edges.
So you call it different stages of evolution?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So it's, you know, based on the evolution of the business, whether they've been going a short period of time, a long period of time, whether they've got a small portfolio or, you know, whether they're in the thousands. So, and there's a lot of space in between, of course.
And you can make recommendations for like a key hire or a different software platform or something like that. Because the other thing that we want to talk about there inside of that is reviewing some of their systems and processes. You call them processes, but we call them processes over here. And that's tomato, a big part of what you would do, right? Tomato, tomato, correct? Yeah. So tell us more about that.
Well, I'm trying not to sound negative here, but certainly down under, there's still a problem here with documented systems and processes. I often go in, talk to the business owner, and the first thing they'll tell me is that, yes, they've got a documented policies and procedures manual. And I say, well, can you bring it to me and show me? And that's when the stress starts, because they'll find that it's a doorstop in somebody's office, or it's gathering dust on the shelf somewhere, or it hasn't been updated in many, many years. Or another favorite I get is that it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. You know, that's always a work in progress. You know, they start to do a policies and procedures manual, but then they lose their focus and just focus on all the day-to-day swamp work. And in some cases, some small business owners say that they'll get systemized when they get bigger, which is probably one of the craziest things you'd ever hear in your life.
That's true. You know,
how about getting systemized now? So then when you grow bigger, it's not going to be quite as painful.
One of the things that we had a goal for in 2018, as I was sharing it with you earlier, is we want to get the CRMC designation, which is the Certified Residential Management Company designation. It's a company designation through NARFM. And one of our goals is to get through that. And you had a very good point. And this is the difference in the market, because it's kind of a fun topic to discuss. You weren't being necessarily negative, but you said, well, what does a designation do for you? And as I mentioned, really for us, for owners looking at us, for tenants looking at us, a designation does hardly anything. But the CRMC checklist itself is that playbook to get to those processes we're talking about, where some of the systems and processes are documented, because that CRMC checklist is like 10 or 12 pages long. And the first thing it's going to ask for you is like what you would ask for in a health check is, show me your policies and procedures manual for this. And then show me your policies and procedures manual for that. And it's really a great thing to go through, even if you don't have anywhere, have the inkling to even get that designation, get the CRMC checklist and potentially do your own internal health check on your business, because that parlays nicely into some offices get too systemized, and that's going to recognize that as well. You mentioned that as well. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I've seen some offices where they've got a checklist for a checklist, you know, they've just gone nuts over checklists. And the problem with that is it just bogs people down, drives people nuts, causes staff churn, because there's just too many damn forms to fill in.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the keep it simple, stupid method.
Yeah.
You saw some of our office here, and we're still using some paper checklists now and again. And I think that's good, because I'm a big fan of feeling it in your hand as far as a tactile sensation, writing it with a pen. And then the key ones, the big ones, like security deposits are big. Those are all going to be color-coded. You mentioned color-coding. Talk to me about that real quick.
Okay. Look, I'll certainly agree with you that you've got to have some paper-based forms in your office because there's just no suitable technological solution. So, yeah, you do need some paper-based forms. But certainly if you've got these standardized forms or checklists, color code them because, you know, it's much easier to recognize something by its color rather than looking for a whole bunch of white pieces of paper with black ink on them, where if you look had a pink form that meant something, or a light green one or a yellow one, you know, they're much easier to recognize in the files.
I like it. No, I like that because obviously we use our property management agreements, our lease agreements, they're all done electronically. So it's not like we're doing 40 pages of that. The biggest ones that we do are security deposit itemization tracking forms, to where there could be, you know, 3, 4, 10 pages of notes. There's going to be estimates. There's going to be all kinds of stuff that go with it that's attached to it. And we need that all in one place, kind of like smack dab in front of you, to make sure that we don't miss that. If it's on electrons completely, a lot of opportunities to miss that, and it's not sitting on your desk like a piece of paper in front of you. You're looking at it. Okay, I got to do that today. And that's why we do that, at least for security deposits. Right, wrong, or other, we're getting it done and we have a procedure. But how the procedure is done is almost irrelevant as long as there is a procedure and it's documented and you're doing it. So you mentioned also keeping proper books. What I would assume you meant was basically keeping good accounting records. Is that correct?
Yes, that's certainly the main part of it, because in Australia, we do have property management only companies, but they're in the minority. Property management is mostly done in Australia by what I'd call mixed businesses, sales and property management. And of course, we all understand that sales and property management should be separate profit centers. They should have their own profit and loss accounts. But, you know, if you're a property management only business, it's making sure, of course, that you have a proper chart of accounts. And I know you've got, I know you're on a crusade at the moment to get some standardization in that area. And I certainly applaud every little bit of that. But also, it's about keeping score regularly, and that is making sure that you are doing your profit and loss accounts every month, that you see how you're going from one month to the next. If you're finding that your revenue is dropping or your payroll is going up or whatever, and you start to see trends forming, that you can get onto those trends quickly. Mm-hmm. Sadly, there are some business owners out there that wait for their accountants to do their books for them, and in many cases, accountants are historians. They tell you what's happened in the past, and often it's too late to make those changes. So it's really about being regularly doing your accounts every single month to notice any trends and things like that.
Agreed. And the proper books is, as Bob mentioned, I'm on a crusade right now to work with NARPM in developing an accounting standard that we can all use as property management company owners. So we have one GL chart of accounts. We have a book of definitions. We have a book of ranges. It's basically the playbook. It's the language of numbers. And I think we can standardize that across the industry. And it starts with exactly what he's talking about with a health check, is keeping proper score. So if we understand how to keep proper score and what the definition of keeping proper score is, it's going to help the entire industry as a whole. But so then at the end of the day, Bob and I, if we're on the same accounting standard, we'll call that whatever standard you want. We can call it the property management accounting standard, you know, whatever name you think of it. If we're on the same standard language, we can compare apples to apples, and the ranges are going to pop out of that. Wow, my staffing range is 48%. Bob, what's your staffing range over there? Well, we're at 52%. That seems a little bit high. What are you doing? And then we can start digging into the actual numbers to say, well, yeah, we're staffed high because we're poised for growth. We're overstaffed by one because we know we're going to add X number of homes this year. And it's a staircase, that whole staffing thing. We could spend a whole podcast on that too. But go ahead.
And then there's also this wild card in there too about owner's drawings. You know, in some companies, you see the owners not taking much out of the company for their own, you know, for their own labor. But in many cases, I've seen the opposite, you know, where some business owners have been taking hundreds of thousands of dollars out and, you know, having 12-week holidays every year and things like that. And, of course, you know, that's going to make the bottom line of the P&L look very ugly.
That's the stuff that we have to back out of there in most P&Ls to figure out, okay, take your owner draw, take your owner salary and back that out. But here's the thing that we have an opportunity to do with this accounting standard is if we can work together with a CPA firm, we can actually set up a revenue versus a owner draw equivalent. And so that could be kind of like the acceptable normal of what type of owner draw you should be taking out of your business. And the rest would be distributed as profit. That's totally something different. The owner draw is kind of like meant to be replacing yourself. So if you go away on a sabbatical for a year, you have to pay somebody $100,000 to come in and replace you. That's what it's meant to be. So we're looking to set up that standard to make a health check, going back to that, make it equate to everybody across the board with the standardized numbers. Great point as well on the owner draw. Any further on that particular issue?
Well, I just agree with what you're saying that, you know, with the role as a business owner, the role that you play in the business, what's the market value of that particular role? And of course, if you spend, you know, 50% of your time in that role and 50% in some other business or other part of your company, then making sure that from a profit and loss account point of view that you're taking into account the right dollars to give a correct assessment of the profitability of the business. So it's really about what would it cost to replace someone who fills your role.
Got it.
This episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show is sponsored by Mark Cunningham of Grace Property Management. Now, Mark has created some amazing products for property management companies. We have implemented his systems and his business income streams into our business here, and I can personally recommend them. If you're in the property management business, I encourage you to visit their website, as you'll definitely find a product that will improve your business. I know Mark personally, and just a small investment to pick up one of his golden nuggets could earn you a return many times over. To learn more, go to propertymanagementsystem.org, again, propertymanagementsystem.org, and to get a 10% discount on all of Mark's products, use the promo code BRAD, B-R-A-D. Hello everyone, Brad Larson here. I want to drop you a quick note about the new Max Grow products on our website. And this is all intended to grow your property management business. Authored by Steve Rosenberg and Pete Neubig out of Houston, one of the fastest growing property management companies around. These guys have put it all in documentation, all on video, all on Excel, all on Word, in formats that you can pick up and use. So definitely check that out on our website. It's called the Max Grow series.
Customer service levels we also want to talk about. Now, briefly, that's going to be a tough thing to quantify. And so the recent trend, been learning from Australians, been learning over here in the States, is we've implemented basically a net promoter score. The net promoter score is something that's been around for a while. You guys have taught that over there in Australia. Getting to an NPS score is the how. It's the challenge. But that actually gives you a quantification for your customer service levels, which I wanted you to talk about.
Yeah, well, certainly NPS scoring is becoming very commonplace in property management in Australia. The software's there. It's easy to use. It's not expensive. It's really a matter of having, you know, getting in and making it all happen. Sadly, though, in some cases, property managers don't really want to know how they're going because they're sometimes frightened of what the responses are going to be.
I am right in that boat. So it's a weakness of any management company out there is you are kind of afraid to hear what your owners might say.
Yeah.
You know, tenants, we know what they're going to say, right? We kind of have a good idea, but we do actually get good feedback from them. But the customer service levels might be apparent where you're getting bad reviews on Google or Yelp and or owners are firing. Well, then you have a customer service level issue. That's even before or outside of a net promoter score.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the net promoter score, I was sorry to cut you off there. The net promoter score, we've actually implemented some good practices there and I'll share them with you, is we have surveys for when new tenants move in. We have surveys for owners. We have surveys for maintenance work orders completed, but we're calling these people, talking to them via phone to get a couple questions answered, which actually equate to a net promoter score, which goes into our metrics tracking, which is something that we can look at month to month to see if we're improving or we're going down in our levels of service. Otherwise, it's like quantifying a school district. You know, how do you know it's a good school district? Well, I think it's good. I mean, they have associated rankings with them, but how well do you believe though? You were going to say something a second ago.
Yeah, what I was going to talk about was in that customer service area was, in my view, the importance of customer service standards in a property management business, or you might call it a customer service charter. And that is where you actually document out minimum expectations that clients will have of the company. And you use it and give it out to clients when they first come on board to say, well, when you deal with us, you know, this is the minimum you can expect from us from a customer service point of view. And you go into things like, you know, response times for phone calls, emails, you know, how many times a week you're going to be showing the property for rent and all. You know, and it drills into the specific functions of property management and documents it all. And you sign down the bottom. It's a charter that everybody in the team agrees to adhere to. Everybody is trained to it. It's a KPI that the customer service charter is followed. And, of course, it's used for marketing purposes.
That's something we're not doing. That's a weakness of ours. Andy Props implemented this up in his business in Park Place, Idaho. Park Place, the company in Idaho. And Andy's a past NARPM president, and he has that. And I'm really impressed with it. That's a weakness. We have not implemented anything like that. I think we have it internally in our head, but it's never the same as it should be in writing. I think that's something we got to do. No, I just created a work for myself. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, in our office, because we have a property management business as well, although I could say that I only just sold out of that in November last year. But in our office, we have that customer service charter, and it's in everybody's job description that as a KPI amongst all the other individual KPIs is absolute adherence to that customer service charter. And in fact, if anybody is found to not follow that charter, and if that causes lost business or having to compensate a landlord or tenant because of not following our customer service charter, then under our employment agreement, that would give us the right to charge that against that particular sinner.
It's just like expectations, written expectations. Yep. I really like it. I think that's something we need to implement. That's a weakness of ours. Mm. So the other thing you're going to be looking for in a health check is the marketing materials, you know, such as what kind of services are offering on their website, how does it look? And of course, you're even talking about printed materials. So tell me some more about that.
Yeah, part of the health check that I do is not only to look at their online marketing, but in terms of basically all their marketing collateral. So when they get an inquiry for their services, what do they send out to people? You know, what do they show people in a face-to-face listing presentation? Their client proposal documents, their rental appraisal documents. Yeah, basically everything to do with their marketing, we take a good look at.
That's good, because then you can advise them to say, you're a little weak in this, you're a little strong here. If you're going to walk into a home, you know, for example, we have pretty decent marketing materials. I might actually have you look at some of ours, but when we walk into a business development appointment, we have our own custom folders. We have a written marketing plan on a slick. On the backside of that, we actually have a checklist of what we want to look for in the home. So there's things that we go through with the owner. So we don't just walk in there with a pen and a scratch pad to say, well, tell me about your house. Tell me what's up. What's your situation? People don't want to see that. They want to actually have a written plan in place. And even if you never talk about it, it's certainly impressive to walk in with.
Yeah. And sadly, in a lot of offices, their marketing materials are somewhat uncompelling when often they're rattling off features of their service rather than the benefits of their service.
That's right.
And in many cases, clients don't want to know, you know, how up to date your technology is, because that has no interest to them. They just want to know, are you going to collect my tenant's money on time? Are you going to pay the bills on time? And you're going to pay me on time? You know, what technology you use to drive, that's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, some people say, well, you know, our business has been going for 100 years, so hire us because we've got, you know, all these years of experience. But to me, experience means nothing unless it's that experience is converted to competency and success.
Agreed. So let's transition. We were going to talk about some of the acquisitions and valuation stuff, but I think that's so broad in two different markets. I think we kind of touched on it earlier with the differences.
Yeah, well, what I will say, at the PM Grow Summit last week, when Jock McNeil and Mike Catalano were talking about things they look for in buying a property management company, I'd say 90% of the criteria that's used to buy a company is the same in Australia as it is in the US.
And it does tell you.
Multiples are different.
Yeah.
But the due diligence process, the sort of things that we look for, exactly the same.
And it ties into a health check because essentially due diligence is coming into some other's business that you want to purchase or acquire or merge with and doing a health check on their business.
Yeah. And to talk to sellers of people who are thinking about selling their company, well, certainly in Australia, and I assume it's the case in the US, where a home seller these days, commonly they'll get a property stylist in when they're marketing the property for sale to make the property look its best. Same sort of thing is happening now with property management companies going on the market for sale.
So they're actually getting somebody to come in and do a potential health check, but then doctor some of those things up and package it for somebody to look at.
To do a health check, but in order to style the property management business so it's going to get its best result and get maximum sale price.
Yeah, it's business brokerage 101. I think that's pretty common.
Yeah.
One of the other things that we want to transition to, this we talked about going through some top five mistakes, or at least top three. So depending on how much time we have on we want to spend on this. And we want to talk some more about that, Bob, because that's one of the most popular things I think people want to hear of is, what'd you screw up? So you're airing your dirty laundry, but then what can I learn from that screw up?
Yeah, certainly in 44 years, I would have made hundreds of mistakes, some massive, some not so massive. And I look back and laugh at them now, but at the time they happened, they were certainly not funny. I've been in situations in my early career and starting up a business where I was, sometimes wondering whether I'd make payroll, whether I'd had enough cash flow coming in to be able to afford the wages and things like that. I've had my house on the line as security for a business and all that sort of stuff. So I've been through all that that pain in when you're starting a business. But a couple of mistakes that I've made that I still sort of remember to this day. One I'd like to share with you is wrong business partner. In a past business venture, I went into partnership with someone, and it certainly didn't work out, and it got extremely ugly, and even got to a stage of litigation. So the word of warning I'd give you out there, if you're looking at taking on a partner, is really do a massive amount of due diligence on that partner and make sure. It's like a marriage. Make sure that you're compatible, that you've got complementary skills, that you're not going to be stepping on each other's toes, your roles, separate independent roles, and that people are going to put an equal amount of work in, or if they're not, that what you take out of the business will be commensurate with the amount of effort you're putting into it.
Yeah. I got a war story there for you, an actual real world. So this was about a dozen years ago, and I was just getting into sales in San Antonio. I left the military and started here in 03. Around 05, I decided to purchase two of the franchises from Exit Realty. And we purchased one. I went in with a partnership. We purchased the first one, and we set it up. We were running. We were recruiting. We were selling homes. And then we purchased another one and set up another franchise. And the two business partners, the one I had in the beginning, we were working out just fine, he and I. And then we decided to bring in an office manager who was a third business partner. So now we have three partners that own two brokerages, not uncommon. Well, it ended up the two other partners are starting to cheat on their spouses with each other. So it was like the worst of the worst scenario. And once I found that out, it was kind of like I couldn't get out fast enough. I took a small little buyout, left them, and went over to Cali Williams. So that was a dozen plus years ago. But imagine that. I mean, you're got all this money invested into a franchise and something like that happens. So I could never have predicted that. And I would have liked to think that you could do your due diligence and all this good stuff in partnerships. But I would also let you know that I think just be weary of them at all times, because even a strong partnership with one of your best friends who you've known for 20 years, that could turn sour. And there's also got to be one person pulling the trigger on everything, one person making the decisions no matter what. It can never be a 50-50. That never works. It at least has to be a 51-49. And the 49 person has to be the type that will accept the decision. If they don't accept decisions, then it's never going to work. And so partnerships are difficult. They can work. I've seen them work. I mean, we were just talking about that a second ago. Jock and Mike over the, they did a PM Grosso with their partnership. They're working together and they work together just fine. So they can work, but just kind of be careful of them, as you know, somebody's got to be in charge and somebody has to kind of take a backseat at certain points.
Yeah. And another big mistake that I've made over my career was that previously, as a sort of a testosterone thing, wanting to have the biggest property management company in town. It was always about doors, whether you've got this many hundred or this many thousand. And it was just this big testosterone thing about wanting to have the biggest company in town. And I abandoned that type of philosophy at least 15 years ago and then set my goals towards having the most profitable property management business in town rather than the biggest, only because, you know, having done consulting since 1983, I've been into a lot of property management businesses, in fact, now over 400 property management businesses, and I've been into some big ones even where they're not making any money. And I just figure, you know, why go through all that pain and suffering if you're not going to make a profit out of it all? So some people have this big pitch about, you know, wanting to just grow 100, grow another 100, grow another 1,000. My view is to set revenue targets and profitability targets to have the most profitable business in town.
Agreed. It goes back to my accounting standard crusade. Is what I want to see happen is people, instead of us having a conversation at a mixer or a conference and you say, how many doors do you manage? How many doors do you manage? You know, it turns out to be a measuring contest and versus
does that happen over here? It happens all the time.
It happens everywhere.
And people don't tell the truth anyway about their numbers.
That is more true than you know. And he would know, but I'm just saying, I'm seeing that more and more as we go through the marketplace is property management companies exaggerate. And I have never been one to do that. I think if you asked me today how many homes we manage, I would probably tell you within 1%. You know, it's going to be a certain range, and that's going to be pretty spot on versus, I think we manage 20,000. I forget this week. I don't know.
And I've got to tell you a quick story about that. As I mentioned, most property management in Australia is done by mixed businesses, sales and property management. And in many cases, those businesses are owned by salespeople or ex-salespeople. Anyway, I went in to do a health check of a business in Sydney, Australia. And in the first 5 minutes, the business owner told me he had 400 properties under management. And I said, okay, that's good. After going back through his property management software, I came back into his office in 30 minutes and said he had 260. There were 400 properties showing in the software, but there are only 260 occupied properties. And, of course, what was happening is property managers were losing properties from management. They weren't taking them out of the software, and they're still just sitting there. And this owner didn't know anything about what was going on.
Tracking through recollection. Yeah,
and that company then needed major surgery to put proper systems and processes and checks and balances in so that he could keep his finger on the pulse of what's going on in the business.
I think one of the best metrics that we could eventually use, and it's going to be potentially part of that accounting standardization that, again, I'm on the crusade for, is the best metric that it's going to produce, I'm hoping, is that it's going to give you a profitability per door metric. And we're all going to be speaking the same equation at that point, to where you take this divided by this equals this minus this. There's your metric. And that should be per month. So it could be X dollars, X plus 10, X plus 20, whatever dollars per month profit you're making per door should be the measuring stick metric that everybody wants to talk about. So I don't care if you manage 10,000 doors and you make 4 cents of profit per door versus if you're managing 100 doors and you're making $85 in profit per door. That's really the measuring stick that we want to get after. So I'm hoping that as we get further along in that project, we can start to develop those five to six to seven key metrics that everybody needs to know about their business and make that the top six or seven that you're looking at daily.
Oh, and one bell ringer too, in terms of mistakes I've made over my career, was taking too long to realize that property managers are not the kind of people to grow your business. Because when I was starting off in the business, I went to the business college that taught you what you needed to be taught in order to get a license. And in many cases, the lecturers in those courses were unsuccessful people or people that were burnouts that, had to teach now to make ends meet that couldn't make it in business anymore. Anyway, so I was taught back then that property managers, one of the roles of property management was prospecting for new business. And of course, it took me too long to realize that business development is a selling activity. It's got to be in the hands of sales type people, not in the hands of property managers. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like the car dealership analogy. Whereas, who do you put on the floor to sell cars? You put sales agents on the floor to sell cars. You don't put mechanics on the showroom floor. And likewise, you don't put salespeople in the workshop.
Yep.
So it's really about these two independent skill sets that I have now. I know there are some exceptions. I know that there are some property managers out there who are also good at selling. And for those business owners listening to this program, if you ever get a property manager in your team that has those mechanic type skills to be able to effectively manage properties but can also sell, then you've got to love that person. Nail their feet to the floor, whatever you need to do to keep them, make them happy, because having that twin skill set is very unique. So really, other than that, business development's about selling and hiring salespeople to do the rent roll, the business growth side of things.
Agreed. Got to have good business development staff. That's one of the things that I've learned from the Australians is having a BDM. And you're exactly right about that. The portfolio manager type, the personality type that you're going to get for a property manager, they're not going to go sell your product. They're not going to go sell your service. They might by sheer chance on a impromptu meeting, for example. But I know this for a fact because we had some large incentives going for our property managers to add in more doors by acquiring a new owner, quite large incentives. And the number they acquired through that time frame of a good 18 months was next to zero. Might have been one or two, but it was next to zero because that's just not their personality. And so once we added business development focused staff, that's when our growth really started to take off. So that's a good one to bring up. Well, good. That's been fantastic. We could probably go on for that, another 30 or 40 minutes on the podcast, but let's call it good from here. We've been running for a good long time. Bobby, any parting words while we end this up?
No, except to say, having come over to the US for probably the last 15 years on and off, to speak at NARPM events and some other various state property management conferences and so on. Certainly I found 15 years ago that there was a fairly big gap between the way property management's done in Australia versus the way it's done in the US. And I'd like to think that we were sort of well in front of you in the past, but I've got to say that gap is narrowing right down now. There are some things that we do better in property management in Australia, and there are certainly some aspects of property management mm-hmm. that are done better in the USA. So there's only a struck match now between I think the standards and the level of professionalism in America versus Australia.
Well, I appreciate that. We've always been kind of chasing you guys. The conference that you invited me to last year, I got to speak at. I was blown away with the level of participation from the members. It was a different level than I've seen before. That phenomenal conference, great time. So if anybody would ever be interested in going to an LPMA conference, ensure you go because Bob is the person that actually started that. And he's the guy that put that on the ground and they made it run and they built it up to something that's really, really awesome. Any conference here in the States, we're chasing what their standard is.
Yeah, and so if anyone's interested in coming to Australia for any of our conferences. We've got three major ones on in Australia and another one in New Zealand. So just go to lpma.com and the information's there.
Awesome. So how would we get in touch with you if we needed to chat up with Bob?
If you want to talk to me at any stage, it's a very simple email to remember, bob@lpma.com.
That's a tough one. I don't know about that. We may have to put that in the show notes. Yeah. Well, thanks again for being here, Bob. It's been a great episode. You are a mentor and a friend to me, and I really appreciate everything you've done. And thank you so much again for being here.
You can hug me later.
We will not do that. All right. Bye, everybody.
This has been a podcast episode by PropertyManagementProductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.